On a personal level, most of us don't think of pollen as much more than a nuisance to allergy sufferers. But for a group of researchers in the UK, ancient pollen has provided important clues that as long as 11,000 years ago, humans were actively shaping the forests around them in Southeast Asia, forests that researchers had thought were still untouched at that time. Journalist Josie Garthwaite wrote about the new findings earlier this month in a story posted on Smithsonian.com, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. The tropical forests that these researchers looked at are throughout Southeast Asia, in Borneo, Sumatra, Java, Thailand, Vietnam. Why had scientists believed that they had been basically untouched by humans 11,000 years ago?
Well, I mean, these are rainforests that are, I mean, they have very thick canopies. There, if you picture what a rainforest looks like in your mind's eye, that there's these huge plants and dense vegetation, it doesn't look like a place where people have been farming, and indeed they haven't. They've been managing the landscape in other ways.
But this is 11,000 years ago, is around the end of the last ice age. How much of a forest was there at the time?
You know, the thing is, people have been living in these rainforests for a very long time, and they've been managing it using fire, really. And that fire would have taken out the dense vegetation that was there, would have taken out the forests that were, in fact, growing in this region at that time. And the thing is, these scientists would expect to see a certain kind of plant sprouting up in the wake of a fire if it was accidental or if it was, you know, just a natural wildfire. But in fact, that's not what they found. They found evidence that people had, in fact, they found evidence of fruit trees, for example, which wouldn't just sprout up on their own. It looks like people were planting those for food.
Now, were early humans thought to have also been active controlling cultivation in other parts of the world at that time?
At that time, yes, that's possible. And in fact, all over the world, scientists have been using pollen and other data to show that people were really managing their landscapes long before agricultural times. In Australia, for example, this idea of using the environment as an artifact, the environment as something that provides evidence of human activity, even when there aren't, you know, huge stone ruins or ceramics lying about or evidence of farms. All over the world, scientists have been able to show that people were really shaping their environments for a very long time.
Are there samples of ancient pollen lying all around? I thought pollen was just a short-lived thing.
You would think, but really, pollen, it sticks around. It has some serious staying power. It can survive for thousands of years. And importantly, it can get buried in sediment. So if there's plants growing around a lake, pollen flies in and it gets buried and it stays there for millennia. And then the scientists can drill down, they extract cores, and they can analyze what types of plants were around at that time and compare it to other places where they have a pretty good idea of what the climate was like, what plants were sprouting up. It basically is a way to read the history of the vegetation over time.
So it's trapped in the soil. I shouldn't worry about ancient pollen floating around when I just take a walk in the woods.
It probably is not what's causing your allergies, no.
What kind of evidence have they found that humans were actively shaping the environment around the end of the last ice age? You mentioned charcoal.
Well, mm-hmm, indeed.
So charcoal is enough to prove human activity?
Well, in itself, it's not. Because, I mean, there could be an accidental fire. There could be just a wildfire, as I mentioned. But the thing is, there are certain types of plants, certain trees and weeds that you would expect to see in the wake of a forest fire, simply because these are plants that really flourish in charred ground. But when you find fruit trees, that's a sign that there's something else going on, and that people were inhabiting this land, that they probably actually cleared it intentionally to get rid of the forest that wasn't edible, and plant sources of food in its place.
But how do they know it was 11,000 years old? Are they using carbon dating? Or you can't use the rings of trees. I can't imagine you'd be counting up to 11,000 on the rings.
No, you wouldn't be. It is something closer to carbon dating. And they take these pollen, these sediment cores into the lab, and they do use something like carbon dating, and they're comparing huge data sets.
So fire was a major way of shaping the environment in ancient times. They would burn things of brush away so that they could clear land?
Yes, that would have been one of the major techniques, yeah, and definitely one of the easiest ones to spot in the pollen cores.
From what you've been saying, researchers have an idea of what these forests might have looked like if humans hadn't intervened.
That's right. They had to go to some really, really isolated areas to kind of get a picture of this is a place where it's extremely unlikely that people were living here. It's extremely unlikely that anybody was kind of meddling with the landscape or the ecosystem in this particular place. And that gives them an idea of, okay, this is what this is the pattern that we would expect to see in the sediment, in the pollen, if humans weren't around, just due to, you know, droughts here and there, floods here and there, just the progression of the natural history. Then they can take that and they can compare it to a place where they think, okay, it's possible that people were shaping their environment here. And when those two cores diverge, that's a flag for the researchers to take a closer look and see maybe what was going on.
Are there people living in these forests today?
Indeed, there are. And this kind of research is really powerful for the communities who are living there now. When you don't have huge stone ruins, you don't have ceramics, you don't have conventional signs of agriculture and landscape management, it can be tricky to establish property rights, and indigenous communities may not have their rights to ancestral lands recognized. So this is really powerful to kind of assert those rights and show that these communities have in fact been actively managing these forests for a very long time. It can make it harder for nations to ignore and really displace these communities to make way for commercial interests, for example.
Well, how many of these forests are in danger of being cut down for logging?
That's a good question. I don't have a precise number on exactly how many forests, but it is definitely an issue throughout the region that's important.
Because that has been an issue in throughout Asia, well, throughout the world, in fact, but throughout Asia, where in some countries the forests have been cut down as a way for teak and other valuable woods, as a way for groups to make money. We've seen a lot of deforestation as a result. I didn't know there were that many rainforests still around throughout Asia.
There are still some that are sticking it out.
Still untouched until very soon, when they'll be cut down, unless the people who live there can make the argument that it's their land and they have ownership?
I wouldn't say untouched. I mean, that's kind of the thing with this research, is it's illustrating that there's a different way of interacting with and managing the environment, that humans don't necessarily completely take down and eliminate the forest. They can shape it in perhaps more subtle ways that allows the forest to persist over time.
I've been talking with Josie Garthwaite, who has posted a story about ancient pollen in Smithsonian.com, and we have a link to that story on our show page at WNYC.org. Josie, thank you so much for telling us about it.
Thanks for having me.